Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Oh, I nearly fell asleep. I was watching The Boys, a TV show about superheroes by Amazon Prime. It's on Amazon Prime. What's it called? Amazon. What's the Amazon TV thing called? Whatever that's called. I was pretty much asleep just then. And I thought, oh, better do the podcast before I actually fall asleep. So, my brain might not be working. Speaking of my brain not working yesterday, this is pretty funny. I think this is really funny. So, it's spring here in Melbourne, and which means hay fever. And I get hay fever pretty bad. And last night when doing the podcast, I had to go and get a tissue and, I'm like, I'll cut this out of the podcast. I need to do some sniffing and some gross noises. Anyway, it turns out I forgot to cut it out of the podcast. And the top comment on today's discussion is from Nifty Riffic, who pointed out, Ander hocked a loogie at 14 minutes 23. Zero Fs given. I just wanted to say there are some Fs given. I completely meant to chop that out of the podcast and then forgot. And if you're thinking, oh, I missed that moment, I'm going to go back and listen to it. I immediately, when reading, after reading Nifty Riffic's comment, I went and chopped it out and then re-uploaded the podcast. So it's not in there anymore. But, oh my God, how embarrassing. Hocked a loogie in the middle of my own podcast. It was really quiet because I had gone into the next room to get a tissue. And so Nifty Riffic must have really had some good headphones on, had it up nice and loud. But still, it's pretty funny. So, sorry about that. Very unprofessional bit of podcasting. Nifty Riffic says, I also second wanting to hear Tech Riffic read a chapter. Who's with me? I am with you. Only if he does it in his Russian accent. So, found it. What's this? I think. Tech Riffic. I'd love to have Tech Riffic. Sorry, I thought for a second, wait, has Tech Riffic read a chapter before on this podcast? But he hasn't. But he did do a reading of something else, which is linked in the subreddit. Tech Riffic says, after hearing your dulcet tones, who in their right mind would want to listen to me? I think he's referring to Nifty Riffic's dulcet tones. I had to put on an accent last time because there's nothing remarkable about my accent. It's not distinctive in any way. In fact, it's a British RP accent I was taught in school. So just imagine a pretentious, slightly posh Brit, and you get the gist of it. I wish I had a cool accent like yours or Anders, comforting Australian. I would even settle for a proper SW English accent, but sadly, I was brought up on BBC and British accented teachers. Younger generations of Swedes have standard American accents. Sweden is in many ways like a small enclave of Americans in a sea of Europeans nowadays. Huh. Strange. I've never been to Sweden, but that is not what I pictured, a small enclave of Americans in a sea of Europeans. Nifty Riffic says, your flattery has distracted me, so I suppose you're off the hook. Dulcet tones, how nice. Yeah, you do have dulcet tones. Dulcet, you don't hear that word often, do you? Unless it's preceding the word tones. I'm trying to get the definition to pop up, but, oh. My definition pop-up-y thing seems to have disappeared. That's no good. Oh well. I Am Norwegian said, earlier in the book, Anna's husband, I think, was talking about a preacher who advocated individual Bible study and personal piety. I wonder if he, too, was a priest. If I remember correctly, he ended up being thrown out of Russia. The footnote concerning that preacher also talked about how this denomination was increasingly becoming popular among the gentry. Thoughts on Kitty's dad? The prince is one of my favourite characters so far. He isn't the deepest or most complicated character yet, but he's just a good dude and a good father. Swim said the Mama Fishy says, this just struck me on your remark about Kitty's dad not being that deep or complicated. Neither is Steva, but the prince is much more preferable to me than hedonistic Steva. Yeah, the prince made a pretty good impression in that previous chapter, didn't he? Yeah, I think so. Simply Productive says, the prince seems like this book's Aragorn. Good, sound moral judgment, sees the situation clearly and without bias, is good with people and sees them for who they are. I really hope we get to see more of this. Huh, there we go. Aragorn. Strider. We've got a Strider in our midst. Simply Productive also said, I have so many thoughts about this book in general. I had some extremely wild early 20s in which I rejected monogamy and was polyamorous for 8 years. This entire book hits on the worst qualities of monogamy and makes it unappealing. It reminds me why I initially was so bullheaded about saying monogamy is a plague on the earth. But ultimately, the concept of a book that focuses on adulterers is just depressing. I hate adultery. Cheating is a horrid thing to do, which is precisely why I wasn't monogamous for a time. It allowed freedom to just date and be merry and a bit debaucherous without hurting people at any point, because you could be upfront about what you were doing. Reading this about Anna Karenina and her internal monologue makes me cringe in the most painful way. I'm so glad we live in a time where you can reject monogamy and not be entirely outcasted from society. But that is the reality of Tolstoy's time. Marriage was truly a ball and chain, and we are in a book of unhappy marriages and unrealistic views of love and relationships. So imagine the reprieve that this spa is. I wonder if Tolstoy did this on purpose, bringing us, the readers, to a spa for a breath of fresh air. I'm sure that he, being steadfastly religious, was morally opposed to the adulterous people around him and formed this book on that basis. But honestly, I would almost rather read about Kitty, Levin, and their lives than anything else. If they aren't together by the end of the book, I'll be extremely disappointed in Tolstoy, and disappointed in general, that I won't be able to scold him soundly for writing a hopeless book. I'm hoping that Kitty does what anyone should do with religion, that is to accept the piousness, the respect for art and nature and for good constitution, and to reject the harsh rules, the judgments, and the sense of being better than others. If she can improve her own views of relationships a little, to see herself accurately as beautiful but not be vain about it, and to gain more appreciation for caring for the sick around her, she could become a very lovely character and really just a great match for Levin. Rather than being a city-bred, high-society woman, she could be a kind of lovely, graceful woman who is content to manage a home and a farm and do it with Levin as her partner. Oh, Tolstoy, how dare you make me feel so invested, but I am. These two are my favourite characters, and I will be heartbroken if there is no happy ending for them. There certainly won't be a happy ending in this book besides these two, so throw us a bone, please. Oh, well, Simply Productive. You've put a lot on the line there. And, look, I don't know how this book ends. I don't know how this book goes. I've never read it. I don't really know anything about it. But I wouldn't go around hoping for a happy ending. Because, you know, I don't know. Do you really think we'll get one? Classic literature. We don't find any happy endings in the classics, do we? Swim said the Mama Fishy says, I don't know, lots of deep discussions going on in this thread. My overall impression was, hey, an exposition chapter moving the plot along and showing some growth of Kitty. Not much to see here. Always good to see the prince with his common sense. But apparently I might be wrong. The questions. What were the questions? Did I even read out the questions? Thoughts on Kitty's dad. Kitty now can't unsee the real Madame Stahl. And thoughts on Petrov. So, thoughts on Kitty's dad. Swim, said the Mama Fishy, said, what a great dad now. I think he learned after Dolly and her disastrous marriage to Stever, though. I think he is trying to thwart the same outcome. About unseeing the real Madame Stark. good for Kitty to pick up on her father's muted observations. Grenker is the real deal. Madame Stahl, not so much. Question 3, thoughts on Petrov? Well, this was just painful to read. Painful to read. Because he was old and weary. Alright. That's the conversation done. Now what we're going to do is go ahead and read chapter 35, which is the final chapter of part 2. So, after this chapter, we'll have a bit of a discussion, or in today's discussion, about part 2 as a whole. Chapter 35 goes like this. The prince imparted his good spirits to his household, his friends, and even to his German landlord. On returning from the spring with Kitty, the prince, who had invited the colonel, Mary Evgenyevna, and Varenka to come and take coffee, had a table and chairs brought out into the garden under a chestnut tree and breakfast laid there. The landlord and the servants brightened up under this his influence. They knew his generosity, and in a quarter of an hour, the sick Hamburg doctor who lived upstairs was looking with envy from his window at the merry party of healthy Russians gathered under the chestnut tree. Beneath the trembling shadow circles of the leaves, around a table covered with a white cloth and set out with a coffee pot, bread, butter, cheese, and cold game, sat the princess in a cap with lilac ribbons, handing out cups of coffee and sandwiches. At the other end sat the prince, making a substantial meal and talking loudly and merrily. He spread out his purchases before him, carved caskets, spillikins, paper knives of all kinds, of which he had brought quantities at all the different watering places, and he gave them away to everybody, including Lischen, the maid and the landlord, with whom he joked in his funny broken German, assuring him that not the waters had cured Kitty, but his excellent food, especially his plum soup. The princess laughed at her husband for his Russian ways, but he was livelier and brighter than she had ever been during her stay at the watering place. The colonel smiled, as he always did, at the princess' jokes, but with regard to Europe, which he thought he had carefully studied, he sided with the princess. The good-natured Mary Evgenyevna shook with laughter at everything the amusing prince said, and even Varenka, in a way new to Kitty, succumbed to the feeble but infectious laughter inspired by the prince's jokes. All this cheered Kitty up, but she could not help being troubled. She could not solve the problem unconsciously set her by her father's jocular view of her friends and of the life she had begun to love so much. To this problem was added the change in her relations with the Petrovs, which had been so clearly and unpleasantly demonstrated that morning. Everybody was merry, but Kitty would not be merry, and this troubled her still more. She felt almost as she used to feel when, as a child, she was locked up in a room for punishment and heard her sister's Mary laugh. "Now, why have you brought that mass of things?" asked the princess, smiling and passing her husband a cup of coffee. "One goes out walking, comes to a shop, and they ask one to buy something. It's Erlacht Excellence der Schlacht. Eminence, Excellence, Serene Highness. Well, by the time they get to Der Schlacht, I can't resist, and 10 Thaler are gone." "That's all because you are bored," said the princess. "Bored, of course I am. The time hangs so heavy, my dear, that one does not know what to do with oneself. How can you be bored, prince? There is so much that is interesting in Germany now," said Mary Evgenyevna. "But I know all your interesting things. Plum soup and pea sausages, I know them, I know it all." "No, say what you please, prince. Their institutions are interesting," said the colonel. "What is there interesting about them? They are self-satisfied as brass farthings. They've conquered everybody. Now, tell me what I am to be pleased about. I have not conquered anybody, but here I have to take off my own boots and even put them outside the door myself. In the morning I have to get up and dress at once and go down to the dining room and to drink bad tea. Is it like that at home? There, one wakes up without any hurry, gets a bit cross about something, grumbles a bit, comes well to one's senses, and thinks everything well over without hurrying. But time is money, don't forget that, said the colonel. It all depends on what time. There are times when one would give a whole month for a shilling, and there are times when you would not give half an hour at any price. Is not that so, Kitty? Why are you so glum? I'm all right. Where are you off to? Stay a little longer, he said, turning to Varenka. I must get home, said Varenka, rising and bursting into another fit of laughter. When she had recovered, she took leave and went into the house for her hat. Kitty followed her. Even Varenka seemed different now. She was not worse, but different from what Kitty previously had imagined her to be. Oh dear, I have not laughed so much for a long time, said Varenka, collecting her sunshade and bag. What a dear your papa is. Kitty remained silent. When shall we meet? Asked Varenka. Mama was going to call on the Petrovs. Will you be there? Asked Kitty, trying to sound Varenka. I will, answered Varenka. They are preparing to leave, so I have promised to help them pack. Then I'll come too. No, why should you? Why not, why not, why not? Asked Kitty with wide open eyes and holding Varenka's sunshade to prevent her going. No, wait a bit, tell me why not. Oh, nothing, only your papa has returned and they don't feel at ease with you. No, no, tell me why you do not wish me to be often at the Petrovs. You don't, do you? Why? I have not said so, replied Varenka quietly. No, please tell me. Shall I tell you everything, said Varenka. Everything, everything, said Kitty. There is nothing special to tell, only Petrov used to want to leave sooner, but now does not want to go, said Varenka, smiling. Well, go on, Kitty hurried her, looking at her with a frown. Well, I don't know why, but Anna Pavlovna says he does not want to go because you are here. Of course, that was tactless, but they quarrelled about you, and you know how excitable such invalids are. Kitty frowned yet more and remained silent, and only Varenka spoke, trying to soften and soothe Kitty, and foreseeing an approaching explosion of tears or words, she knew not which. So it is better for you not to go, and you understand, don't be hurt. It serves me right, Kitty began, hurriedly snatching Varenka's sunshade out of her hands and looking past her friend's eyes. Varenka felt like smiling at her friend's childish anger, but feared to offend her. Why, serves you right, I don't understand, she said. It serves me right because it was all pretense, all invented and not heartfelt. What business had I with a stranger? So it comes about that I am the cause of a quarrel and have been doing what nobody asked me to do, because it is all pretense, pretense and pretense. But what motive had you for pretending, said Varenka softly. Oh, how stupid, how stupid. There was no need at all. It was all pretense, Kitty said, opening and shutting the sunshade. But with what object? To appear better than others, to myself and to God, to deceive everybody. No, I shall not give in to that again. Let me be bad. But at any rate, not false, not a humbug. But who is a humbug? Asked Varenka, reproachfully. You speak as if... But Kitty was in one of her fits of passion. She would not let Varenka finish. I am not talking about you, not about you at all. You are perfection, yes. Yes, you are all perfection, but how can I help if I am bad? It would not have happened if I were not bad. So let me be what I am, but not pretend. What is Anna Pavlovna to me? Let them live as they like, and I will live as I like. I cannot be different. And it's all not the thing, not the thing. But what is not the thing? Said Varenka, quite perplexed. It's all not the thing. I can't live except by my own heart. But you live in by principles. I have loved you quite simply, but you I expect only in order to save me, to teach me. You are unjust, said Varenka. But I am not talking about others, only about myself. Kitty, came her mother's voice, come here and show Papa your corals. Kitty took from the table a little box which held the corals, and with a proud look, without having made it up with her friend, went to where her mother was. "What's the matter? Why are you so red?" asked both her mother and father together. "Nothing," she said. "I'll come back in a minute," and ran away. "She's still here," thought Kitty. "What shall I say to her? Oh dear, what have I done? What have I said? Why have I offended her? What am I to do? What shall I say to her?" thought Kitty, and stopped at the door. Varenka, with her hat on, sat at the table examining the spring of her sunshade, which Kitty had broken. She looked up. "Varenka, forgive me," whispered Kitty, coming close to her. "I don't remember what I said." "Really, I do not wish to distress you," said Varenka, with a smile. Peace was made, but with her father's return, the world in which she had been living completely changed for Kitty. She did not renounce all she had learned, but realized that she had deceived herself when thinking that she could be what she wished to be. It was as if she had recovered consciousness. She felt the difficulty of remaining without hypocrisy or boastfulness on the level to which she had wished to rise. Moreover, she felt the oppressiveness of that world of sorrow, sickness, and death in which she was living. The efforts she had been making to love it now seemed tormenting, and she longed to get away quickly to the fresh air, back to Russia, to Ergushovo, where, as she knew from a letter from her sister Dolly, had moved with the children. But her affection for Varenka was not weakened. When taking leave of her, Kitty tried to persuade her to come and stay with them in Russia. "I will come when you are married," said Varenka. "I shall never marry." "Well, then I shall never come." "Then I will marry for that purpose only. Mind now, don't forget your promise," said Kitty. The doctor's prediction was justified. Kitty returned to Russia quite cured. She was not as careless and light-hearted as before, but she was at peace. Her old Moscow sorrows were no more than a memory. All right, there we go. That's the end of part two. Have your say over at the subreddit. Thank you very much for listening. I will see you tomorrow.